Paul Steinhauser with a live report. He reports nationally for Fox News and our course, Good Morning New Hampshire. 6 hour studios. Paul, President Biden seems to have discovered a map back to New Hampshire. He's come here a few times all of a sudden, including the First Lady. He'll be in Merrimack tomorrow.
That's right. And actually, they just changed it, Jack. And now it's going to be Nashua. Nashua tomorrow for a speech, probably late morning, early afternoon. You're right, his second visit. He was here in March and now back, coming back tomorrow. Of course, he wasn't here for about a year and a half during the primaries. Listen, let's not even get into that. That's a whole other story. We could spend hours talking about that. After he's done here in New Hampshire, quick trip, then he goes down to Boston for a pair of fundraisers, as I reported last week, before heading back to Washington, D.C. So President Biden coming here this week for former President Trump. Well, the big question will be, does he testify in his trial, in his criminal trial down in New York City? Prosecution is just about ready to wrap up their case, and then it'll be the defense's turn. And everybody's wondering whether the former president will testify on his own behalf. The other thing he's going to do this week, Jack, he's going to be holding a rally on Thursday in the South Bronx. That's right, Donald Trump in New York City. You know, he's if he thinks he's going to maybe try to flip the blue state New York red, I don't know. But that's where he's having his rally, in the South Bronx.
Paul, these trips, of course, have to be planned, well orchestrated. There's security concerns, logistical. You know, it's interesting. I look at New Hampshire, Paul, and I'm trying to peel the onion back a little bit. Because right after the president's State of the Union, he went to some select swing states. And then all of a sudden he shows up here. And then next week, the First Lady, Jill Biden, comes here. Now he's back here. You would think New Hampshire is solidly in the Biden bag this fall in terms of a blue bag for Biden. Why all of a sudden the sudden love fest after 2 years of blowing off New Hampshire and saying it wasn't diverse enough? Yesterday he gives a speech trying to, I think, placate to a part of the voting bloc he may be losing to Trump. Is this a little disingenuous, this all of a sudden this sudden affection for New Hampshire, or is it a sign that even New Hampshire's in play?
New Hampshire's in play. And New Hampshire, listen, even Biden won the state by 7 points over Donald Trump 4 years ago. But typically, New Hampshire in the general election, in the presidential election, is a purple state. Go back 8 years ago, right? Donald Trump lost New Hampshire to Hillary Clinton by only, what, a couple thousand votes. It was razor thin. And it's always been a really thin margin. Nobody expects Joe Biden to win the state by 7 points this time, right? He may be the favorite here, but New Hampshire is definitely going to be in play. We're a swing state in the general election. So I think you're going to see the president come back a couple of times, and you're probably going to see Donald Trump come back here. He was obviously here a bunch for the presidential primary, but you'll see him, you know, later this summer and this fall. Yeah, we matter, Jack. We definitely matter.
It's nice to be loved all of a sudden again by Joe Biden and the DNC and the Democrats and the White House. All right, thank you, Paul.
Have a great day.
Michael Graham, he's head of New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com. You might agree with me. I thought this New Hampshire should be in the bag for Joe Biden this fall. Why is the president coming back to Nashville to buy a townhome? I don't think he is.
Well, you know, happy to have him. Obviously, a lot of great senior facilities here in New Hampshire, and they have a lot of the extra help that people who are in his state need. So that would be a very good thing to happen. But it will be interesting to know how New Hampshire looks. As you pointed out, Jack, at the federal level, New Hampshire rarely votes red. Do you know the last time a Republican carried New Hampshire's 4 Electoral College votes?
The last time, give me a second here, hold on. We're not going to go back to 20, okay, well, hold on. Was it G.W. Bush or was it Ron? President, you said. So was it Bush, G.W. Bush?
Yeah, who carried the Electoral College the last time Republicans won the 4 Electoral College votes? When was it?
I don't, when Bush was first or second?
It was George W. Bush in 2000. In 2000, the year. If New Hampshire had not flipped, there would have been no Florida. It would have all been over.
Yeah, this is after he got shellacked by McCain in the primary, but won the presidential.
1988, Republicans have carried New Hampshire once.
Yeah.
In that fluke year.
Well, what do you make of Joe Biden popping back here tomorrow?
That's what I'm saying. Is so you've got a state that's pretty solid. He won it by 8 points last time. It's, you know, not exactly. And so the two things I keep asking, and we're asking at NHJournal.com, is, one, does this say something about, you know, internals that they see, or is there some other issue Is it just an easy state for him to get to? It's a relatively short flight, whatever. Or are they trying to build a new map because they agree with the strategists we talk to who say Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, and Nevada are all lost. They're all gone. Trump already has them. Nothing Biden can do to get them back. And so he needs to find some other states to help fill in the gaps. Because if they're right, Jack, and those four states are Trump states, Biden has to win all three, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. He can. It's possible. But, boy, betting your whole presidency on a trifecta of three states where right now you're tied at best,
yeah,
that's tough. So maybe they're looking for a cushion from New Hampshire. I don't know. But like you said, they should have it. So why are they here?
Well, I think it's quite interesting because it's not random, as you know. What else is cooking NHJournal.com,
Michael? As you know, and if people get our newsletter and you can sign up for free at NHJournal.com, one of the things we try to do is we try to keep score. People go to Washington and they vote. And we think those votes should be watched. So, for example, Representative Ann Custer, who's on her way out, has voted against virtually every pro-Israel piece of legislation except for one. Whereas Chris Pappas has kind of gone back and forth. It is interesting. There's a new report out that we picked up on. The billionaires who are backing the Israel-U.S. go to hell protests are also giving about $60,000 to Chris Pappas's campaign.
But they're not anti-Semitic. They're not anti-Semitic.
No. They just hate Israel and Jews.
Israel That's go to hell, Jack. But they're not anti-Semitic.
In the least. And rivers of the sea, we want it to be Jew-free. Forget two states. We want 48, which is a call to return to the pre-Israel.
But not anti-Semitic.
Real Clear Politics did a really good look at the millions of dollars coming from the Soros, Rockefeller, and Pritzker foundations, and those groups have also given Chris Pappas about $60,000. So that's interesting. And then also, you were talking about the butcher of Tehran. When President Obama was in office, he wanted to give the Iranian regime with the butcher in charge billions of dollars. They did. You remember the infamous pallets full of cash that were landed at the Tehran airport? Who supported that? Then Senator Jeanne Shaheen. When Trump came into office, he wanted to stop money going to the butcher of Tehran. They did the maximum pressure policy. They tried to leave Iran broke. Who opposed President Trump and spoke out and wrote letters urging him to change his policy? Senator Jeanne Shaheen and Senator Maggie Hassan. When Biden came into office, the billions started flowing, somewhere between $30 and $70 billion in new oil revenues that that Joe Biden allowed to flow. Who supported those billions to the butcher of Tehran? Jeanne Shaheen and Maggie Hassan. Those are their votes. This isn't a judgment about their party. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm simply pointing out that's their policy, is that we should engage Iran, give them more wealth, make a deal with them.
Right.
And, so I was listening to what you said about the butcher, and I'm like, how many people put those two together? Not a lot.
Plus, he was the lead architect of the enriching uranium, trying to make them nuclear.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And who do you think they would love to use a nuclear weapon against?
I wonder who the Israel must be wiped off the face of the earth people. One of the many, many things I love are the Queers for Palestine signs. The LGBTQ stands with, Hamas side. Do you understand what happens in Hamas world and Iran world to gay people?
Yeah.
They literally throw them off of tops of buildings. It's not a exaggeration or rhetoric.
What about all the young women on college campuses? Do they know how they treat women in Tehran?
That is a very good question. And
Do they know what the butcher Tehran did to that young woman? I can't think of her name, who pushed the dress code years ago, and basically got taken out back.
Just remember, they've been publicly beating women in the past 2 weeks because someone in the Biden administration finally complained about it, and this is their position. Who's trying to age that regime? Our elected U.S. senators.
Yeah.
As opposed to taking another policy, which would return if Donald Trump wins, which would be the maximum pressure position where you try to break them and force them to make concessions they don't want to make, because you know what they do when they have money. They give it to the Houthis. The Houthis, by the way, Jack, this weekend hit another tanker going shipping oil This is what they do with our money if we let them have it.
All right, Michael Graham, NA Journal. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Doug Tengden, World Market Advisors. And, Doug, I hope you had a good weekend. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Jack. I had a wonderful weekend. I was up at Mount Washington.
Were you?
Yeah.
What were you doing up there?
Oh, I was skiing Tuckerman Ravine.
That was sarcastic.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I missed the edge on your voice.
plenty of good snow up there in the bowl. I mean,
yes, still enough. It's going fast. But the best part of it, Jack, was that I had my 24-year-old son to carry my skis and boots for.
You know, I haven't done it since I was young, and I remember my dad would carry most of the stuff. I was quite young the first time I did Tuckerman's, and he passed when I was young, so I had to be like 10 or 11, and that was one of the bonuses. I got pictures. It was a beautiful day, just wearing like a turtleneck, no sweater. The sun was bright. People were having picnics. But the good thing is I had a pair of old blackhead junior 60s, where metal. They were heavy.
Oh, my goodness, what a great memory you've got, Jack. I haven't remembered my junior 60s in a long time.
You remember those skis? I remember
Absolutely.
When they were brand new. And
yep.
It was either that or Rosignol's, right?
Yeah.
And,
no, the junior 60s, heavy metal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he carried them, and we got the ski down. It was just wonderful. All right, Doug, what's going on? I just noticed the only good thing I'm seeing is some lower gas prices. But I got to tell you, Doug, again, my conversations, maybe it's where I live in the Seacoast. Each weekend I seem to be pumping into more and more people saying, can you believe the prices of houses around here? How does a younger couple, how does a young person buy their way? How can they afford anything right now in this area for, you know, there's nothing under $1 million?
It is really, really hard. Yes, and housing in the area has surged in terms of price, and the activity has slowed in response. It's, you know, in New Hampshire, new home sales, it's early in the season, but new home sales are down 20%, 18%, 19% from just a year ago. It is really hard. Nationwide, things are doing okay. We're pretty much holding even in terms of home sales. But here in the Northeast, it is very, very hard. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any change on the horizon, at least what I'm seeing.
No, and with inflation kind of hanging out at 3.5%, and 3.5%, here's the newsflash, that's not the Fed's target. The Fed's target is 2% for inflation, and if inflation hangs out here at 3.5%, the Fed's going to say, you know, higher for longer means higher for longer. And, you know, my New Year's resolution was to believe them. When they say something that they intend, then believe them. And I think they're going to keep rates up here for a while.
Yeah, and wasn't it interesting? Because, Doug, I'm sorry, I got this pesky memory. Maybe that's one good thing. We were just talking about junior 60s, those skis. And, you know, it's funny. I remember where I got them. You're going to laugh at this. You've probably skied Sunday River in Bethel.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Cayley Ski Shop right at the bottom of Cascade, that little ski shop on the left. And my mother's family was from West Bethel, Maine. So my uncle ran the ski school. My grandfather, Roland Nealon, ran the mixing bowl lift as a kid. My aunts worked in the ski shop and the lodge. So we were like family on that mountain. And when you needed a buck or two to go in and get some French fries.
And it was only a buck or two back then.
Yeah, and you know what your parents said? By the way, get out there and ski. I don't care how cold it is. You know, these things are expensive. And by the way, Doug, just a fond memory. My grandmother, Nealon, would sit back on I call it the farm in West Bethel. We'd all be gone all day. She probably loved the quiet. And she'd be sitting there, you know, making all kinds of baking stuff, but she'd be sewing the names and all my cousins and the mittens, you know, those, they were kind of a different leather material, not as shiny. It was like a rough leather that were expensive gloves, your helmet. She'd put all the name tags in the back of a coat because in case it was lost, you know, that was an expensive item for families,
right.
You know, to be able to buy a ski parka or gloves, right?
Right.
Remember those
Absolutely.
Days of the name tag when you went to school, like Doug Tengden, this is your blue, you know, your blue, I don't know, whatever, ski park or whatever.
Yep. I remember those days. I'll tell you, the bowl was filled with a bunch of tourists from Quebec. It was a 3-day weekend, Victoria Day, the rest of Canada, but it was Patriots Day in Quebec is what they call it.
I wonder if that's why I saw a lot of Quebec license plates this weekend on the seacoast.
Because it was a 3-day weekend. But I'll just say that housing nationwide is holding up again, you know, but it's tailing off in New Hampshire, and it is obviously related to mortgages and mortgage rates. If you wanted to buy just a normal house, you are paying twice what you had to pay, you know, 2-3 years ago. And that's affecting housing, and housing is the future of the economy. So it eventually will tail through. But the stock market isn't worried about it. The stock market, it hit all-time highs on Friday, and you know, we'll look and see what the Mag 7 have for earnings, but it looks pretty strong.
Yeah, well, we'll see where it all goes. We'll see where it all goes. Thank you, Doug Tengnan, World Market Advisors. I'm glad you did you get some sun up there, and you get a little bit of
it was cloudy and rainy. It was sunny the rest of the state, but cloudy and rainy on the mountain. The rock pile tends to gather the worst weather anywhere, and it pulls it in there. But it was fine. It was good. It was soft, and it was tux.
When you came out of Pinkham, or what's up? Yeah, pretty
much. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course. Gotta go up. Gotta climb up what you ski down and stay safe.
All right, thanks, Doug. Fun stuff. Thank you for the Mother Nature update as well.
Yeah, have a great week.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent on a Monday. Good morning, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. What's cooking?
So what's cooking is that kind of everything you're talking about, this delaying of the purchases of big things, those interest rates, those are a big, big, big issue. And as a result, the big ticket items, whether it be, you know, an in-ground pool or a mattress or big electronic appliances like washer, dryer, they're not moving. People are delaying those. They're saying, yeah, I could build it, or I could just wait around until interest rates come down. And this is actually might bode well for the general picture of the national economy, because for so long it's been K-shaped, and it still is K-shaped in terms of the recovery. And I love that descriptor, because it means that it's experienced very differently by different classes. They diverge, like the arms of the letter K. Those on the upper end are doing fine, the lower end doing poorly. But if everyone is pulling back on spending together, this is the evidence that the Fed needed from their interest rate increasing policy to eventually lower rates. Now, is it happening at the next policy meeting? Probably not. But does this make it more likely to happen towards the end of the year? Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah. You know, inflation, you touched upon it. Inflation is a very doesn't have much mercy as a tax, because it hits everyone. So even if you're a gazillionaire and you go out to buy something, you're going to pay the same price. You don't get a discount for being Tom Brady or someone. But if you have more money, more liquidity, you can afford and absorb inflation easier than someone on a fixed income. And that's why inflation is so punitive and so painful.
Exactly. And like, if you have money in savings, you're earning more money. And then you can maybe, depending on how big those savings are, just live off the interest. I've said this for a long time, and I will continue to say it. Being poor is expensive. Like, the bills just come in heavy, where it's like just having a little bit of money makes everything easier in terms of, if you just look at it from an investing perspective, there's no question about it.
Yeah. All right, Aaron Rial, thank you. Hope you had a good weekend. Aaron Rial, thank you, NBC News.
Likewise, Jack. Have a good day.
Brad Card will join them as a political analyst and all-star, one of our political analysts and all-stars, Card and Associates. Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Jack.
Well, where do you want to start? You knew that history. You were listening earlier. You gave the answer correctly. The last Republican president to win New Hampshire's presidential.
2000.
Yep.
So, yep, 2000. Super close, too. It was a very, I don't remember exactly. It was less than 2 points. It was like 1 point something percentage points. It was very close.
What do you make? Peel this onion back, Brad. You know all about, you're up here on the day of the primary. We were doing the show live in the presidential primary at your alma mater, St. Anselm College Institute of Politics. You know Joe Biden didn't come to New Hampshire for 2 years, blew off our primary. Now all of a sudden he's coming back again tomorrow in Nashua, Joe Biden. Why is that? Is he worried? If they're worried about New Hampshire's four electoral, they've won seven of the last eight presidential elections in New Hampshire have been won by Democrat presidents. Why is Joe Biden coming back again? Is he all of a sudden got a, you know, rediscovered New Hampshire? What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's the four electoral college votes, Jack. You know what I mean? That's what we're looking at. I mean, Joe Biden is clearly in trouble nationally, and he's in trouble in New Hampshire. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens. But my guess is Kelly Ayotte's going to win that Republican primary for the United States Senate. And I think that she's going to be drawing a lot of folks out. I think Trump's core base is going to get out. I do believe that New Hampshire is not a Trump core base state. We saw that in the last election. We saw, you know, candidates lose. They were all the Trump candidate, and those candidates lost statewide. And the guy who was not a Trump core candidate won overwhelmingly, and that's the governor. So I think the proof is in the pudding that it's not a Trump core state. But I think Kelly Ayotte appeals to a lot of those voters, and I think those voters are going to get out and vote, and they're going to show up and vote for Kelly Ayotte. And I don't see those same voters going across and voting for Joe Biden. So that's bad news for Joe Biden. Joe Biden's in trouble. He's in trouble in Arizona, where he's upside down. He's in trouble in Florida. He's in trouble in Georgia.
What's driving it, Brad? I've read some of the backdrop on these polls, not Fox, but ABC, New York Times, CNN. What's driving him being in trouble in some of these states? What is it? You know, everyone knew, let me just phrase it this way and I'll stop. Brad Card, Card and Associates. Everyone knew Joe Biden. They know who he is. Everyone knows Trump, right? Why are these polls shifting? What are the driving issues? In one of these polls the other day, I think it was New York Times or ABC, it was 2,200. What is driving this away from Biden? If you had to say, what are the issues driving this away
from Biden? I think issue one, two, and three is immigration and southwest border. We see it spill over to states when they're sending illegal immigrants up into Martha's Vineyard, into New York City, into some of these places that are very blue centric locations, and they're going in those locations, and there's such outrage. And I spoke to a woman up in Massachusetts who's a hardcore Democrat, and she was outraged that they would send, with no warning, send these illegal immigrants up. And I said, oh, kind of like what happens to the southwest border on a daily basis. No warning, people showing up, coming into the country. Okay, so now you have to deal with it. So it's different when you have to deal with it versus when they have to deal with it on a southwest border. And to her credit, she actually said, you know, I didn't think about it like that, but you're absolutely right. It does show that the immigration system is broken. We see Democrat mayors outraged at the way that this administration is handling immigration. And, oh, by the way, we see the majority leader in the United States Senate now saying he's going to bring up the negotiator, which was a bipartisan negotiated immigration deal. He's going to try to bring that bill to the Senate floor just to give some of his moderates cover, meaning the ones that are up for re-election, and I don't think they're moderate senators, but they are up for re-election and they're in danger of losing. And that's specifically, I'm talking about Montana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, those states are in play with Republicans, and Republicans, some people give the Republican the nod in some of those states, especially in Montana and Ohio. Trump is going to win those states overwhelmingly. So he's trying to give those senators cover to say that they voted for a comprehensive immigration deal, yet we see the president, he hasn't taken the type of executive action to stem the flow, and this is killing him.
You say that you think it's 1, 2, 3, southern border, but
because it feeds into everything else, Jack. It feeds into the crime.
It
feeds into the inflation.
Yeah.
It feeds into housing. It feeds into so many other things.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I think the old, are you better off today than when Trump was president? Are you better off today than 4 years ago? I think the economy and inflation is driving people almost out of their homes, and I think people are fed up with it. They want someone to come in and manage the economy better, and they don't like what's happening. That's just my take.
Yeah, and tell you, Jack, it's very interesting that the two candidates who, in my opinion, neither one of them are very good debaters, have agreed to debates.
Yeah.
And we're going to see debates. And you know, we see there's a pretty significant trial going on, and you talked about CNN doing nonstop coverage of it. Although this morning I will say that they were covering the indictments by the ICC
Well, of course
Hamas
they were. Of course they were. Even though we don't recognize the ICC, but yeah, of course they were.
Right.
Yeah,
I agree. But we're seeing a trial that is unprecedented, and I think it's worthy of coverage. But the reality is, I mean, this pontification about, you know, is Trump going to testify? Well, I'm going to go out way out on
it's about ratings, Brad. It's about ratings.
He's never going to testify. Trump is never going to testify.
And this,
he's not completely
all these
stupid
trials, Brad, every single one of them, I think, is going to have zero political impact on the results this November.
Well, I think polling suggests you're correct, Jack. I think this was the worst trial to bring forward. As you know, I've had real concerns with the records retention, and that is now pushed off. It looks like it's not going to happen before the trial. In my opinion, that's where Trump is. I think he's dead guilty on that, and I think that he'd be in deep trouble if that went to trial. I think that he would probably be found guilty, and I think that that is the trial where the best case could be made to secure a conviction against Trump. But again, we see politics get in the middle of it, and we see overreach. And in New York, I think we've seen overreach, and people are just kind of rolling their eyes, and nobody's really paying attention to it other than for entertainment value.
Brett, I've impressed you on this one, Brad Card. I want to, you know, you brought up the debates. So we know who the vice president is with Joe Biden, Vice President Harris. We don't know yet. We don't know yet who Donald Trump is going to pick. It could be Huckabee Sanders out of Arkansas. It could be Tim Scott of South Carolina. I don't know. If you give me the top, I did this the other day with Brad. Give me the top three, likely, not who you want or think, but who do you think Trump will pick if you had to say three? Give us one, two, three, Brad.
First of all, I'm going to preface saying I have no clue. But my what I do think is I think Governor Burgum makes a lot of sense because I think he can appeal to moderate voters, and I think that that would be interesting. I think Marco Rubio was on that very short list. And it would not surprise me at all if he picked Marco Rubio to be his running mate. And that's somebody that would be attractive probably to a number of moderates. I mean, I that goes to the more traditional Republican base. I don't see Nikki Haley being in the mix. I would say it kind of bothers me that we see these sycophants just drinking nonstop Kool-Aid where they feel that they have to say they have to puppet everything that Donald Trump says. And to me, you know, I look at Elise Stefanik, who is just 1,000% agreeing no matter what Donald Trump says, she's going to agree to it. And she's, you know, playing that whole game with Donald Trump to be his running mate. I think she's super talented, very, very, very smart, obviously young woman. She might make sense to pick. I do fear that I think that her politics as of late, historically she was a moderate, but as of late, she's become just kind of a Trump puppet to a degree, and chanting whatever he says. Byron Donald, African American, Southwest Florida member of Congress, you could make a case that he could be good. Again, he is somebody that is a sycophant of Trump, if you will. He is not going to say anything or do anything.
You didn't mention Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah, I think that she's probably in the mix as well. You don't hear that much about her, so that may be a telltale sign that she might be on that list. I do think the ones who think that they're going to get it, they're the ones that won't get it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Trump likes to play that game.
Will it matter? Trump is such a strong force. Will it matter who he picks?
Not much. But quite frankly, Jack, voters like me at night, Donald Trump is old, and Joe Biden's older, and age is a factor.
Yeah, you look
and
at
people
what
are wondering
if, what
how
if.
Long are they going to live? That's just the reality.
Yeah.
And so I think that vice presidential candidates are going to be important to some people, and probably important to me. So I think that that does matter a little bit. Now, I think that the debates are going to be extremely interesting, and I think that that could.
You think both will happen as planned?
Yeah,
or you
I
think
do.
It'll be like
I think
a last minute
a real line. I don't think we're going to see.
Did you see where
back
Trump
forth.
Over the weekend said, "I want to see a drug test from Joe Biden before I debate him"?
Yeah, that's pretty stupid. I mean, yeah, that's what we get with Donald.
No, but
Trump,
I had to chuckle though because I was thinking, look at everyone out there thought the same thing in the State of the Union. Boy, they propped up Joe Biden pretty good. Who is this?
Yeah, maybe they gave him a shot of adrenaline.
Either
right?
that or like eight Mountain Dews. I don't know. All right, Brad.
Yeah, it is difficult. And Jack, we haven't talked, but boy, Bruins laid an egg. They just laid an egg.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
on that note,
I don't think it starts till Wednesday. Who do you have, Rangers or Panthers?
You know, I like the way the Panthers played, but boy, the Rangers are very good.
Yeah.
They've got good goaltending, and they've got some guys that can sniper. Crowd is a, Kreiner is a great player, and I think that we'll see him light it up a little bit.
Thank you, Brad. Great stuff this morning. Fun stuff on a Monday. Thank you. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, checking in, keeping an eye on the Trump hush money trial, Michael Cohen. Rory, I'm not a legal eagle, but kind of a little bit of a oops for the prosecution, a little bit of a banana peel on a slippage on the floor. Michael Cohen testifying, he stole from the Trump organization. I don't know how credible he's going to be in the end. Do you?
Right. Yeah. It went from bad to worse when it came to the star witness for the prosecution. Last week, he was a liar. This week, he's a thief. And this is some of the last questioning in this trial. We're going to see if the defense chooses to put anyone on the witness stand. Right now, the current schedule calls for testimony perhaps to wrap up today, and then they'll have closing arguments after Memorial Day. So it will be a whole week of nothing. So they'll do closing arguments followed by jury instructions and deliberations all together, because otherwise it might have to break up over several days, and the judge would rather avoid that.
I don't know what CNN is going to. Maybe CNN will start rerunning the movie Jaws over the Memorial Day period without this.
Yeah, they could do news.
I don't know. I haven't seen much on the Iranian president, the helicopter crash, the butcher of Tehran. I haven't seen much on that one this morning. I've seen a lot on the Trump trial.
There was a lot of that. I've been watching since 4 o'clock this morning. There was a lot on it then, but it's...
How credible are some of the, out of Great Britain, basically, are some of the news reports that some of the women who were victims of his torture, going back to the 2022 crackdown there, are sort of celebrating online? Is this fabricated or real?
Well, what we're seeing is a big difference in the response in the cities versus in the more rural areas. So the much more liberal thinking, and that's on a scale now, but much more liberal thinking in the urban areas of Iran compared to some of the more remote areas. So it may not be out of the question that we're seeing some of the women celebrate like this.
All right, good stuff. I appreciate it. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Tom Raffio with some good news on a Monday. President, CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Delta Dental Radio, author of several great business leadership, inspirational leadership type books. Also stories from the Starting Line. Big help last Wednesday. Our Make 12 Hours Count for Veterans Count. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to hear from you. And you know how you always compliment me that I can connect the dots?
Well, you do. You're a great dot connector.
Perfect. Well, then I'm going to connect my good news with veterans. So on Saturday, we had an amazing Arthritis Foundation walk to cure arthritis. So we did it from Delta Dental Stadium. We had well over 100 people. We raised $47,000. And in the process of prior to the walk, we went over a number of statistics. Well, one of which is that, you know, one out of four adults in New Hampshire are afflicted with doctor-diagnosed arthritis, but that also includes getting now to the connecting the dots. That means about 30,000 veterans have arthritis that's been diagnosed, and the number probably is higher than that. So, yeah, the hot tub will probably be good for them. But the point is that we were able to get the word out on the importance of arthritis research, because people don't realize that it's not just, as you, your words there, like the aches and pains that we have as adults, but there are about 20,000 youths, people under 12, you know, that have doctor-diagnosed arthritis. And it's really, you know, life-changing when you're a parent and you come from the doctor and they say your child has arthritis, because most of us don't even know that a child can get juvenile arthritis, and more children are affected by juvenile arthritis than juvenile diabetes. People have obviously heard of that. So it was just a great day, and I had the physician honorees there. I had the youth honoree, the teen honorees, and each story was more compelling than the prior one. And before we could even start the walk, we had tears in our eyes, because we had, you know, young adults who, you know, were in a wheelchair, and now they're walking around. And a youth honoree from like 4 or 5 years ago came right up to me and walked the whole way with me. And he said, you know, like several years ago, he was in a wheelchair, and now he's a sophomore in high school playing all the sports. So it was just a great day, Jack. So that was my Saturday. And while that was going on, we also sponsored the walk to, you know, for sight, which was held in Concord, and that was well received. And then on Sunday, my wife dragged me, Jack, to Pak Banadnock, Temple Mountain, not to ski, but to run up, to run up. So it was quite a day there Sunday. And you know, driving out there, Jack, like Peterborough area, I mean, we live in the most fantastic state.
You know, it's funny, because while you were saying that, I remember that row where you see Temple on the left and the view. I have not, Tom, honestly, been out to that part of the, you know, state in a lot of years. I used to go out there more for different stuff on the news side. I remember Dublin because they're home of Yankee Publishing.
Right.
And I remember when you go around in Dublin, you see the lake there, and then before you get to Peterborough and that part of the state. And you're right. And people don't know this, but Monadnock is one of the most hiked trails or mountains in the United States per capita.
Absolutely. So it was just great.
And it's almost like a totally different, like, no offense, it's got its own political business center, the socioeconomics. Just like for a small physical state, it's like a state in and of itself in the western part of our state.
You're right, and the thing was, from where I live in Bow, it only took like, I don't know, 50 minutes to get to, you know, Miller State Park, which is where I was. And it was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. Anyway, so I just encourage people.
I haven't been out there in a long time. Yeah.
And hike it. In this case,
Did that ski area ever reopen, Tom Temple?
It hasn't.
Yeah. It's too bad. It's a nice little area there for people. Because a lot of these, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I love that we have time. Tom Raffio, like you talk about the Canterbury Shaker Village a lot, but a lot of these smaller ski areas that used to dot our landscape, whether it was up in Hanover or Temple or Francistown, these smaller areas were quite common and vibrant in the community, but it's just so hard now with overhead and Mother Nature and snowmaking and cost to keep you almost have to be a big, multiple-owned, economy-of-scale, super-duper ski area to make it today.
Agreed, and it's all about the economics, and like you say, with having to make snow. But in any event, hiking is great, great area. Encourage people to visit. And since you mentioned Canterbury Shaker Village, that race, which was a week ago, did raise a lot of funds to help keep Canterbury Shaker Village vibrant. And one of my goals is to get more people out there to Shaker Village. And then lastly, I can't end a call without imploring my veterans friends, if you're on oral health pain, if you're in oral health pain, just give me a call at 223-1300, and Dr. Mitch Corray will give you a call back.
Leave your name and cell phone right at the top.
You got it. So anyway, and the book, Stories from the Starting Line, those sales, the results of those sales go to funds so we can continue to do more oral health for veterans. So thank you, Jack, and we'll talk Friday.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.